listen deeply, really listen. The gift of listening is quiet magic, and when you use it, you'll learn more than you ever thought possible.
You know, if there's one designer who really gets the soul of a bride, it's Kate Halfpenny. She's the founder of Halfpenny London, and honestly, what she's created is just, it's so much more than just beautiful dresses. It's about making women feel amazing in their own skin, confident, empowered, completely themselves on what is classed as one of the most important days of her life. And it was talking to her, and I just kept on thinking, God, this woman must just love women. You can feel it in everything she does, her care, attention. It's not just the look. So we chatted a lot about her journey from working with Vivienne Westwood to building a brand rooted in self-love and individuality. And it reminded me of the power when someone stays true to their purpose. There are wobbles, for sure, and we cover those. There's the roller coaster and the dips that make you feel sick to your stomach. But I suppose Kate's story shows that when you lead with heart, you can create something that goes well beyond what you've imagined. Enjoy.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. So let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration. Kate, it is lovely to be talking to you. Welcome to Conversations of Inspiration.
Thank you for having me. It is so exciting.
And we're both sitting here in our thick-rimmed glasses. We've already had our chat about, and we're going to talk about this because we have a couple of things that are in common. But the last time we spoke was COVID time. And I'm going to refer back to this in this podcast because it was SME SOS, which I launched, I think it was 24 hours after lockdown. And I'm really excited to talk to you about your whole world. So as I said, we've got a couple of things in common. We love a good evil eye.
Certainly
I know that we've
do.
Got eyes.
Yeah, it never leaves me.
Yeah, there it is around your neck. Gorgeous bling. Funny enough, around your neck, we both have an addiction to jewellery as well, I know. I call myself, look at your, yes, there's her wrists covered in bling. And I'm actually building up, I've decided to go back to my old days where I used to have, I don't know, 20 bangles on each wrist.
Yeah.
And I used to have you used to know that I'm coming, like a sort of
cowbell.
You know, a cowbell, exactly that. I was just literally going to say, what's those cows in Switzerland? The cowbell, I'm going back there, right? So I'm going to send you after this because I found some great bangles. And the other thing is we love our interiors as well.
We do.
I describe, because my son just came home. He didn't just come home. He came home quite early this morning with a couple of friends. And that was good because, you know, we love a good wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning. And they sort of were looking around the house and, you know, it's like yours, a little out there. It's confident. And they sort of said, what do you do? And I was like, well, I sort of, I'm not going to bore you this morning with my small business love, but I just sort of do this sort of thing, you know, creativity. This is sort of my yoga.
Yeah.
I don't know how you describe it. I don't sort of do anything except Holly & Co. And Holly & Co. is, it's a love of interiors, colour, creativity, less ordinary.
Yeah, 100%. That is exactly my, my definition too of relaxing is pouring through magazines, interior magazines, not fashion really, ironically, being in the fashion world. And also home tools. I'm obsessed with home tools. Like that is just somewhere I, you know.
What do you mean home tools? Oh my God, are we going to find another common denominator?
Are, yeah, literally.
Go on, tell me.
Like Architect's Digest home tools.
Oh my gosh, I think we're going to become best friends. It's that scene I always refer to in Notting Hill. You know, when she follows Julia Roberts up to the toilet, you know, and says, maybe I should leave you now. I'm having one of those moments with you. One of my favourite things in the world to do is go to Wix or B&Q or anywhere like that, or a good manual of stuff. Do you remember in the Sunday Times when we were younger, maybe, there was like that innovation little magazine?
Yes.
And you used to go through it and it used to be like gadgets to put your socks on.
Yeah.
It is, that is just heaven.
My childhood was getting the Argos catalogue out and just looking through that at my grandparents. Like, they'd always have it under the telephone table. So the telephone directory, fascinating beasts they were.
Yes.
But the Argos catalogue was just...
Do you remember the next catalogue?
I do. Oh my gosh. And literally they were hardback.
Hardback?
And they were just like, if you had the next catalogue, you'd kind of made it. And if you had the latest next catalogue, you'd made it even more. Like, I remember going to my friend Emma Islips at school, and I'm sure it was her mum that always just had the latest.
That was a thing. That was a thing. Now, for everyone who doesn't know you, and I'm sure everyone does, you're the most celebrated bridal designer, and nothing brings you more happiness, apart from the little things that we just spoke about, than your brides. But I wanted to ask you, tell me about sort of this creativity. We're going to get into your story and we're going to start from the beginning. But just before that, you've just renovated this old vicarage, and it is a labour of love for sure. And I follow you on Instagram. It's full of colour and art, and it's a dream. Tell me about this haven that you've created.
We have bought a beautiful 5,500 square foot vicarage that was initially built in around the 1300s, the original bit, and then it's been added on and added on. And it is, we specifically come to Faversham to look at another house that we'd seen online that had this giant gymnasium attached to the back of it that had been turned into like a community centre, a Georgian house with a community centre attached to it. It was just fascinating. And we were like, we could have our artist studio in there, we could have all of these things. Anyway, we went to look at that and we were like, there's no garden. It's not right. We're not leaving London for a house without a garden. So we, at the same time, my husband had said, oh, I've seen this kind of rambling old vicarage in the same town. So we booked both of them to view, and we pulled in the drive of this. I remember pushing Sylvester into, putting him into the pushchair and pushing him into the front door and just kind of just looking up at this house. It had a turning circle and it had cars just parked everywhere all over the grass because it had got some kind of, you know, those guardian tenants in to stop people breaking in. And the last people that had owned it were the church. And it was just, it kind of took our breath away, but it was a grim, kind of a grey day. And we were just like, oh my gosh, what a massive project. I'm not sure we can do this. And we both went, no, it's just too much, just too much. And then about 2 hours later, we were going, but it is quite amazing. Anyway, I then flew off to Morocco with some girlfriends and for a long weekend. And by the time I'd got off the plane, I was phoning the estate agent to put an offer in. And then I called my husband and I said, I phoned the estate agent and put an offer in on that vicarage. He went, I knew you would have done that. I knew you would have done that. I just knew it. I just knew it. And he was like,
I love your relationship. Yeah. You don't have to ask him.
No. Well, I just thought if he doesn't agree, then we can pull out. But I just thought we just need to. So then, yeah, it then took months and months and months to buy it because the church had only just put it on the market, and then they had to market it for a period of time. And then it went to sealed bids, and there were eight people at sealed bids. And literally, I'd become best friends with the estate agent, and I would call every single day to say, is there any news? Is there any news? And she'd be like, they're all meeting next week. They're all meeting this day. So in the end, I've become such good friends with this woman. And I knew exactly when she worked, what 3 days she was in. Like, by this point, it was ridiculous. And afterwards, I phoned to say thank you that we'd got the house and everything. And they said, oh, she doesn't work here anymore. And I was like, because I wanted to send her flowers. I wanted to say,
yeah,
you literally held my hand through what was the biggest move of our life, to move out of London to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was almost like she never existed. It was kind of, I didn't know, you know, where she'd gone. I couldn't send flowers. It was almost just like this kind of crazy guardian angel that had been put there.
How beautiful. How beautiful. Do you approach, I was thinking about this love of interiors, do you approach your sort of designing your home in the same way that you, I don't know, might think about designing your dresses?
Because 100%.
The style shines through,
yeah,
right? And you're the creator,
yeah,
so to speak. But does it transfer?
It does, but it's really difficult with interiors because they're so much more physical. And it's not like taking a sleeve off a dress and saying, actually, I think I prefer it with a shorter sleeve. Or when you've committed to tiles and you've committed to building a wall or putting something there, it's far more brutal to go, actually, that's wrong. So that's why sometimes making decisions like the bathrooms, we've recently finished those over the last year or so. And I just spend so much time in the prep of it. So even though I do take the same kind of approach, I go through, it's almost like cutting the sleeve off, changing the hemline. I have to do all of that before we can finally get there.
First.
So yeah, I love it.
Yeah, because it's quite an expensive mistake to make if you need to take the tiles off.
And what I try to do with the interiors that are more permanent, as in tiles and walls, is to do something that will stand the test of time. Yes. I was going to turn the big double wet room. I was going to do it with terracotta tiles, floor, ceilings, everything. And I'm just kind of so glad I didn't, because now I just see so many terracotta tiles and that kind of deep red bathroom that I would have. Instead, I went with a mixture of marble and I did weatherboard on the walls. Everyone were like, what do you mean you put wood on your wet room walls? And I found a wood called Tricoy, which is like an MDF that's waterproof. And then I had them sprayed in a car garage. So I have, I'll send you pictures after. So it's shuttering like on the outside of a house, but the wet room walls are that.
Oh, my.
It looks so
gosh.
Cool. And it's so low maintenance because it's car spray. So just literally give it a wipe over.
And practical. Not that I think about anything practical. I don't know about you. That's that sort of thing, you know. I'm like, Frank, I'm going to do this and this. And his first thing he says is, how would you dust that? And I'm like, do you think dusting had any place in the mindset of my creating this masterpiece of a wall or something? Are you practical and design or?
No, I'm not that practical, to be honest.
Good.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did a house up many, many years ago in my 20s in Ladbroke Grove, and I did the kitchen tops in sandstone, which was stunning, beautiful, this kind of amazing brown sandstone. But every time, if you were going to put a mug away in the drawer and you knocked the edge, it would chip. And it was just like, what was I thinking? I did that house with an ex who said that, you know, he never wanted to have a house party in there because it would just be trash.
Yeah, it'd just be carnage. Yeah.
So when him and I split up and we were selling that house, I got pipe lagging, you know, that you put down your pipes, and I pipe lagged all of the counter. And then I had a party for about 300 people in that house before I sold it. And I'm never, everyone was like, what was all of this around the beautiful, beautiful kitchen and pipe lagging? Gaffer tape.
They were like, Kate, she doesn't necessarily have it, does she? Tell me, I want to go back to little Kate in Derbyshire. I read when researching you for the podcast that you had a creative household. So you were sucking this up. Your grandmother was a machinist at a denim factory, and your mother, Josephine, was a knitwear designer. So you had literally fabric in your DNA, in your blood. It ran deep.
It did. My grandmother taught me to sew on a manual machine to start with, and then she had it electrified. Oh, God, I'm sounding ancient. Actually, the denim factory, it was interesting because it was the denim factory that would repair all the overalls for Rolls Royce.
Oh, wow.
So instead of you just getting a new pair of overalls, you would your damaged ones would go and get repaired by my grandma and all of her amazing friends. And they were really proud of what they did. It was an incredible job. I just wish people valued so much that craft these days.
Yeah.
It was just wonderful. She'd get on her bike, cycle off there. It was just gorgeous. And she taught me to sew. She taught me to repair and rewear. She taught me to cut things up and remake things. And she genuinely instilled that level of craft creativity. And my grandfather, actually, I remember something. I love handwriting. I'm obsessed with it. I would copy my mum's handwriting. She had the most gorgeous, cursive, beautiful writing. And just copy. There's a teacher, Mr. Turner, that I'll never forget from St. Benedict's, from my school, that just used to have the most beautiful, he'd write everything in caps. And I'd sit and copy in the lesson. I'd probably be in such a trance, not doing my work, just copying his handwriting. So my granddad, it stuck with me that there is no such thing as messy handwriting.
Mm.
So that creativity, grandma's machining, and then mum. She always was, she'd take things like curtain poles, the slightly scalloped curtain poles, and then she'd put on a bandsaw that she had in the garage, cut these little discs, and then hand paint flowers and scenes, and then gloss them and put brooches on, backs on them, and do craft fairs and sell them. And she always kind of worked as a receptionist or different things for, mainly for Celestian Textiles, which is the factory that used to make all of M&S's underwear.
Right.
And she set the knitwear business up as a little side hustle. So I think the creativity was always there in many ways what? With mum, whether the knitwear business was her full-time joy for life. She was never that lucky to have that for her whole career.
What a wonderful way to sort of come into the world with that surrounding you. How did it manifest itself as a child? You know, when you sat there with your mum, and was she always encouraging you to express yourself or carve out your identity when you were little? And I read that when they were available, you would cut out photos from fashion magazines and mix and match the outfits.
Again, like the Next catalogue, getting a Vogue magazine was an utter treasure because there was no imagery online. That just didn't even exist. It was just, we didn't even have computers at that very young age. And any opportunity to get pictures and fashion and, you know, record covers and smash hits and all of those amazing magazines, it just, yeah, I loved it. And mum would always say that there wouldn't be a piece of paper in the house near anything that I hadn't doodled all over. Or, you know, even if it was just, I often would sit and just write Kate, Kate, Kate. Like, just, it sounds insane, but I'd just be practicing.
You know, we're at our age, it doesn't sound insane anymore, does it?
No.
I mean, if our kid was doing that, I think, I don't know, maybe I'm in a bubble, I don't know, but are we more aware that that means that that's the diamond within them,
yeah,
you know, and that actually that's the thing that they're going to do? I mean, when you were just talking there, I think back to when I was, I've got to think I was 13, 14, and my birthday present was World of Interiors for a year. No, we couldn't afford it, 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, that's a serious magazine that getting, you know, it. And I would cut out every single page that I loved and created a binder for it.
Yeah.
And like, I'm literally sitting in my room before my GCSEs, you know, with these Moroccan riads and these sort of things. And I would redo my bedroom all the time. You know, mum would come up and I'm like, I'm redoing my bedroom, cutting up her sheets, putting them on my ceiling as clouds, and then having this whole, I mean, what? She let me, and we weren't a creative household, so to speak. But it is amazing now, I think we're much more aware. I don't know about your son, but thinking about what we're seeing and allowing maybe that seed to be the seed of their life rather than potentially what we were in, which is actually you also need to be cookie cutter.
Yeah. Sylvester is immersed in interiors. He is obsessed. He's 9, 10 in August. He is like, he got home from school last night. We went straight up to the second floor where we're just renovating the loft. And he was just like, so what's happening here? And I said, I just want to talk you through some lights that I've bought, and I don't know what you think. And he said, I think they should go this way. And I said, I'm not quite sure. And I'd bought those kind of architectural tubes to put up there. And I'd bought long ones and some shorter ones, and we got them out and we were playing. He's like, I think they'd be like, he was doing something radical with them. I was like, oh, don't want to do that. But he, I'll never forget, I was on the, in working from home in lockdown, I was on a Zoom call with the whole Net-a-Porter team talking about the new collection we were doing with them. And I said to Sylvester, you know, he was kind of sat next to me, and I said, you know, you mustn't speak throughout this. It's, you know, I'm doing a meeting. But I'd said to the team, you know, Sylvester's here next to me.
Yeah.
And he disappeared off, and I was on this call, and then he came back and he's going, I really need to speak to you. And I'm like,
you were having one of those moments.
Yeah. And I said, I'm so sorry. I think something's wrong with him. I really need to talk to him. He's kind of gesticulating across the table. So I said, what's wrong? And he said, they're painting this kitchen ceiling the wrong colour. And I was like, what? And it must have been after the, it must have been when we could work from, I can't remember, or he wasn't back at school or something.
Yeah.
Because we got builders in. And the decorators had put a primer on the ceiling to seal the beautiful old ceiling. And he thought the primer was the paint colour we'd chosen. And he knew what paint colour we'd chosen. He said, they're doing it all wrong.
So sorry, he's 9 going on 10 now. Yeah. That's 5 years ago.
Yeah. So we've always been doing the house, and we've always been on. So
Wow.
He's fascinating. He's amazing. So for Christmas, he asked for 200 planks of wood to build a house. And he wants to build a house. He wants to capture the water from the humidity and the rain to create the water. He doesn't want to plumb it. He's got all of these ideas. And James and I, the dream after this house, when we finish this and when we no longer want to live in this giant, big, cavernous, dusty place alone, we want to build a house. And we talk about Sylvester because the Minecraft houses that he builds for us are just incredible. So
yeah. Unbelievable. That's where Minecraft is incredible. Incredible. Absolutely. Not the movie necessarily, which I haven't had to go through because Harry's now 20, but he was a Minecraft head massively. Yeah. And what they were building and the crazy conversations. But a few girlfriends with the, your age kid literally said they wished that there was wine on tap as they had to go through that film. Oh. I'm going to get back to you. You spoke of your influence of your wonderful mother and that she's had on you. And I'm so sorry that you lost her. And
yeah.
I can only imagine, I've still got my mum, the immense pain that you felt. She's a huge part of that golden thread that goes through your life. And that, do you feel like her legacy lives on through what you do?
Yeah, 100%. We, every single day, she's there in something, you know, that she, yeah. Oh, I didn't mean to get upset.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to upset you.
No, don't be silly. I mean, it's 3.5 years ago, sometimes it just feels like yesterday. I bounced so many ideas. It was her and I for sure.
Yeah, I read that she used to use the offcuts and make flowers. And so she was really part of your world, not just as an observer and a cheerleader, but she was part of it.
Yes. Yeah, so we used to make this amazing skirt that used to take circles and circles of silk organza. So we'd, if you imagine cutting circles out of a square, you're going to have triangles on the outside, large triangles. And then we'd have to cut a circle out the middle of this skirt. Now, this skirt I'd originally made for Rihanna for a music video, and it became one of our best-selling skirts. And it was a labour of love, and it was beautiful. And it still is. We still have this amazing skirt. But Mum and I would be like, look at these stacks of beautiful circles that we've cut out from the middle and the triangles from around the edge. And Mum's like, give me those. I'm going to make something with them. So she took them home and she hand cut all of these amazing organza flowers and then French knotted them together. And so these delicious and these dandelions and all of these flowers and something made from waste. It was all about repurposing offcuts and just not, you know, I design with a conscience. I would never say I'm sustainable. I think that word is way overused, but to try and repurpose things and to find the beauty in the smallest piece of cloth is what I strive to do.
Yeah.
And so she turned up with this Tupperware box full of these beautiful flowers. And I was just like, oh my God, they're like heavenly. It was just like, we could just drop them onto silk and we could just drop them onto tulle and they'd make veils. And those flowers, we never quantified. Mum would just make them. And towards the end of her life, she had a trigger finger happen. So she couldn't French knot anymore. So my friend Abby would then do all the French knotting. So Mum would cut them all out. She would pin them into the clusters and then she would take stacks of boxes of all of these flowers pre-prepped to my friend Abby that lives in Faversham, who's an incredible embroiderer. And Abby would French knot all of these hundreds of flowers. So still never quantified or really ever paid Mum for doing it. She just did it. She just loved it. It was, you know, she just spent hours cutting these things out. So when she passed, we got all of these orders for dresses with these flowers on. We got all of these orders for these veils. And we were like, gosh, how many flowers do we need? And it was like, Abby, do you think you want to take on the cutting? So literally, Abby has only just stopped making the flowers because she's just so busy and we need thousands of these things. But they're still handmade by the team.
How unbelievable is that?
Yeah.
And that your brides were wearing your mum's work.
Yeah.
I mean, just so beautiful. However big you were getting, that your mum was doing that. I just thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry that that hit you there. But it's, I don't know, it's so beautiful. It says a lot about you and your relationship. What is it about handmade items that just feel so soulful? Is it the fact that they're made to last, I wonder, and better for the planet? Or that you know someone has poured all they've got into creating them? Or maybe it's that you know they are one of a kind and not mass produced. Because that's our passion at Holly & Co. Our marketplace is an emporium of over 20,000 unique finds, all touched by hand. And I've brought together a whole community of artists and makers who champion quality, sustainability, and purpose. These founders, or as we call them at Holly & Co, our co's, each have the special touch of magic that brings something unique so that you can shop with pride, knowing you're supporting UK craftspeople and celebrating originality. It also means that the incredible gifts or homeware you buy has a story behind each piece. Every item is made with care and meaning. And what could be lovelier than that? Find us at holly.co. But now, back to our conversation of inspiration. I'm wondering, can I take you on to school and creativity there? Many of my guests on this podcast found that it was a difficult time, unless that one particular teacher did see the talent. As we said, you know, others would force them into the cookie cutter system and they were wanting to write cake many, many, many times, which wasn't going down well, maybe in a math lesson. How was school for you?
I don't think anyone saw the potential in me at all at school, sadly. And I did go back to school to do a lesson quite early on in my career, just to go and do something with the art department. And then, no, it wasn't for me. I was seriously dyslexic and I had no idea. I was quite good at math. I wasn't dyscalculia. I never even say that.
I'm with you. Fellow dyslexic. Yeah. Don't even try and say the words either.
Exactly. And so I just remember feeling so beaten down, especially in English. I was just like, I just don't understand it. I just stick commas in everywhere. And I had that creative, I had that narrative, I had that story. And I see it the same with Sylvester, and my husband's really dyslexic too. Mm-hmm. Sylvester has all the ideas and his teachers recognize that. And it is so magical. The primary school that he's in, they're just like, he's got such a high IQ. He's super intelligent, but he, you know, there's maybe a bit of ADHD there as well. And I was like, I think that was me too. And the dyslexia, it's just like, let's just, by the time he's coming to exams, he'll just be voice noting it or recording it. Like, it's not stifling him, whereas it stifled me. I couldn't get out what I wanted to. And the way that I work and I create is all intuitively and instinctually, and creative comes just naturally like that. And school expected you to have done your research a certain way, to have done the prep work and the sketches for this and your textiles design. And it just wasn't me, and nothing kind of fitted in. And it was a great school, but
You ran, didn't you? You said I that when as as soon as your GCSEs finished, you ran as fast as you could to art college and then to university before you headed to Central St Martin's. I think I'm right in saying that it was during your time at uni that you specialised in bridal wear for your final collection. But it was bridal wear, of course, because it's you, with a difference. You did something no one else had done, and you created separates, which... I love that. It just, when I was researching, I was just like, oh my gosh, that didn't exist. So you wanted to do bridal wear differently because it challenged you? What was that? What made you do that?
I didn't understand why you had to wear a wedding dress. I didn't understand why it had to just be step in, step up. Why you wouldn't have a choice to create the elements of the dress. So I also identified that brides these days wanted to be able to dance and enjoy their dress. This was the late 90s as well.
Yeah.
So I did mini cocktail dresses with giant tulle overskirts. And on the catwalk, the models just unbuckled the skirt and dropped it to the floor and then stepped out. And they were just wearing these amazing little mini dresses for the party. So it was that kind of whole, everything about my brand now, still to this day, it's like you have a base dress, you can put your beautiful over shrug or an overskirt, or you can have sleeves, or you can wear trousers with a beautiful overskirt, then take off the overskirt and you're in your trousers. Like that for me just made sense. And that's what I've always done. And I had a huge vintage collection as well when I started, and took elements of that and trims of that and were inspired by that and added a big overskirt to these little lace dresses. And it just made sense. And I just couldn't understand. I couldn't understand why it just wasn't the norm.
Isn't that fun? Because that's what the most creative people say. I just didn't understand how that didn't exist. What is that? I mean, the fact that that's not a thing, well, of course it should be a thing. I'm wondering if there was a moment early on when you realised that your way, I suppose, so to speak, or your instinct to do things was actually the superpower. That's the seed. That's the thing that makes you, and how you navigated getting people on board. I mean, did you have to get people on board?
Yes.
I mean, was that a thing?
It was on board as in to support me
Yeah, like, so you know, so you know it. Like, why hasn't this happened before? I'm doing it. It's as clear as day. You can see it. You can see it. Did you have to persuade others to see it?
To some degree, it's only been the last few years, especially to our American stockists. I mean, you know, we're stocked in Kleinfeld in New York, even the famous Say Yes to the Dress store. And they will can and will only sell our dresses. They don't sell the separates. They can't do that in that kind of machine that that department store is.
Right.
And still some of our stockists buy heavily into separates, into dresses versus the separates, because particularly the mums in America, they don't understand why their daughter would be wearing a top and skirt. Like, it doesn't feel special enough. Right. So there is still some, you know, resistance to it. And I've been wholesaling now for 10 years. But in my boutique, I just think that's why they come to me. That is the wonder of Halfpenny and the potential for you to really influence what you're going to wear than having to just put a dress on and think, actually, I don't like the sleeves of this or the neckline. So let's change those elements. And you really keep going until that inner light bulb goes and you're found the one.
Gosh. I think part of the reason your designs potentially are so beloved is you tap into a respect that women are unique and that you allow them to be themselves. So that uniqueness, that one in 400 trillion chances of them being born, and this is their day, so we're going to get it exactly right for you. And I was wondering, do you think that actually, I heard you say that there's no such thing as a typical bride. Do you think that bridal wear possibly, more than anything else, I don't know, because we potentially all have a dream, or I don't know if that's going or coming and if that's the right thing to say or not right thing to say, that gives women an opportunity to really express who they are on that day. That's their moment. That's their, Rihanna might have it all the time, but this is our Rihanna moment.
Yeah.
And this is their time to tell people who they are.
That is true. What I love about dressing brides is it is exactly what you've just said there. And I say it a lot. Rihanna and Kate Moss and all those incredible women that I have the privilege of dressing would have that experience all the time. And when the brides come to me, for me, it is their celebrity moment, their moment to really empower themselves. And, you know, they're spending an awful lot of money on this wedding dress. They're having this creation made for them to absolutely shine. And I always say it isn't a moment to test new styles. It's about being the very best version of yourself and try things that will surprise you. Try, you know, you think, I don't want a strapless dress, but try one because you never know how incredible it might make you feel. So it's just magic. It's just gorgeous. And it's my team in the boutique just are wonderful with the brides. The reviews and the reports that they, you know, I didn't know I could feel this good. My favorite brides are the ones that come, they've never tried a wedding dress on before, they're petrified of the whole experience, and it's like, let's just show you how fantastic you feel.
Yeah, let's cocoon you.
Yeah.
And it's, and I can imagine it's also that sort of I don't know, when you just said that, I would feel so safe. You give me such a feeling of safety that I would come in and it would be such a safe place for me to tell you maybe how I would want to feel. And, you know, maybe, it is actually all about me and I'm so not used to it being all about me and I hate my arms and I've never liked this and you're
that.
Putting me into, I mean, I can imagine you have the arm conversation a lot.
A lot. I'm in that same arm.
Yeah, I'm in that arm thing as well.
And the knees, actually.
Oh, the knees, yes. Knees and arms. And I mean, gosh. Tell me, I just love hearing that after leaving Central St. Martin's, you just went and did a slight internship at the one and only Vivienne Westwood. And that must have just been, you're a young designer. Did you know how iconic this was, this moment?
Oh my gosh, I'll never forget when I spoke to them and they said, yes, you can come and do a year's placement and we pay you £50 a week towards your travel. I mean, she was just my hero. She's from the area that I grew up, not far. She was a maverick, a rule breaker, a disruptor, a genius. And yeah, hugely has influenced me. It was there, though, that I quickly realized that I didn't want to work for another designer. I didn't fit in with being a choir part of the choir. And it wasn't that I thought I was better than that. It's just, it just didn't, it just didn't work. It just didn't work for
work
me.
For
and I,
you.
And I wanted to be so hands-on and there, you know, I was just the intern. I got to sweep the floor and I got to sew buttons onto Andreas's trousers that had come off or iron things or, you know, I didn't get any juicy bits. I think the interns.
But you were lapping it up just like when you were a kid.
I was lapping it up. Oh my God.
Just like when you were a kid, you had, you know, if you think, you know, before you've even started your own brand, you had been brought up the way you'd been brought up. And then you got to have a once in a lifetime. How many people got to intern for Vivienne Westwood? I mean, and you were lapping it up again, filling your boots with this. Because I also can imagine as a female, let's get into that, a woman seeing another woman, which we have so few of, answering to nobody, doing it her way, you know, sticking her fingers up to the, you know, the man. And you were absorbing that as well. I mean, that's quite an amazing thing anyway for us women to have, to be, to witness that courageousness.
Yeah, she was brave and she was uncensored. And part of my letter to my younger self that I've written is kind of, it's that constant, you know, validation from other people or, you know, be courageous, speak your truth. And I think she is the ultimate role model for somebody that has stood up for everything that she's believed in and really marched forward and didn't care what other people thought, which is something that is something that does plague me.
I know. I slightly wish you could take a pill and just have that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like truly not, you know, not just say it, but truly not, not care. You realise you just mentioned there that you quickly knew you needed to work for yourself. And in your own words, you said you fell into costume and styling.
Yeah.
And you were working as a costume designer for commercials and videos and became a celebrity stylist. And we've mentioned old Rihanna, not old, but, you know, Rihanna, because now she's sort of like, through you, is now a friend of mine. And you work with these most amazing women, Kate Moss, Kate Blanchett, Rihanna, just to name a few. And what was that time like working with these iconic women? And how did that influence your creativity? Because I ask, because I can imagine styling women like that required such a deep understanding of who they were. I mean, was that sort of, were you working, so the muscle you have today in understanding your brides almost was worked out with maybe these women? Because you have to obviously speak to them, you know, that they had to be them on the outside and you were sort of the conduit.
Yeah. Everything that I learned through dressing all of those incredible women and the incredible men that I worked with too, like all of the personalities and the body shapes and the expectations and the demands of what the clothes needed to do for these people really set the foundation for my brand, for sure. My brand is built on the fact that not everyone is the same, for sure. And, you know, from one moment, you know, I could be dressing Erin that's super tall and willowy and has this incredible body to, you know, to Kate, who is a completely different body shape. Like I would never, ever put them in the same dress.
Right.
So it wasn't that you could just like wheel your rail of dresses and go from here to there to the next. Every single client would have their own exceptional rail of garments or the product that we were using for a particular job, or, you know, and that was something that I celebrated. And that is exactly what we do in the boutique. There's something for everybody. That we don't say that we are, you know, our bride is this, she works there, she's this age, she's this job, this is where she looks, this is what she listens to.
Yeah.
There is none of that within my brand. She is everybody. We welcome everybody through the doors and we want to literally see you glow.
And I think it's quite interesting when you were talking there, I was thinking about, we don't have a sort of, you know, lots of businesses, you know, will have not in the high street, we even cut her out of cardboard and called her, I don't know, Sarah. And Sarah was X age and this was her life. And this is, you know, and it does sharpen the mind, certainly. But the only thing is that actually the reality is, yes, you could have a, you know, you're catering for brides. Yeah. You're not catering for workmen. Okay. So we've got this. But actually, your obsession with their individuality and your obsession with the fact that they might So they're not workmen looking for work clothes, they're brides looking for bridal dresses. Okay, so I've got that. But then within that pool, they're going to be highly individual.
Yeah.
And I think that that can happen with so many things that we see, that you almost see brands, you feel like they've got a cardboard cutout somewhere.
Yeah.
And that they're not expanding the breadth of what they offer, or understanding that things change and, you know, what's being influenced or I don't know. Do you see that as a common thing within industry, that you're, I don't know, fashion industry, you know, that people aren't really understanding the individuality or the celebrating, well, because we've got, you know, everything is, you know, made margins, grey-haired men running things. It's got no sort of place in their sort of boardroom.
I don't know. It's difficult to sort of pinpoint it, really, because over the last 5 years, things are shifting for sure. And it's less
bad or good.
In a good way, in a positive way.
In a positive way
with brands. And I think people are saying more like I am, that it's not, we're not trying to just pigeonhole a look or a brand or a person.
That's positive.
Yeah.
I'm happy you think that. I've got a feeling that, I don't know, what I see, I certainly on the high street or things like that, and I do mention it on this podcast, that I just think that we are being dulled down. I don't know. I feel that the creativity has less of a space potentially than we did. Maybe it's because I love this podcast when I talk to amazing people, where we start from the King's Road and the shop that they had at the King's Road.
Yeah.
And
imagine,
you know, the days that you could just, you know, create a collection or you could create something, and now that would have no space. You know, that just would have no space. You couldn't afford to do it. I don't know.
I suppose what I'm referencing are my peers or people that are in the sort of fashion spheres of what I'm absorbing and looking at and inspired by. And I suppose, yeah, when you do put it to the high street, then it is a bit homogenous and it is a bit...
Sorry, I went a bit lowbrow there.
No, not at all.
I'm joking, but I'm like, yes, you're right. Maybe in your sphere, actually, you know, even the thoughts of, and I was going to talk to you about sustainability, because I do think it's an overused word in terms of the sort of thing, you know, shows can be difficult to do, or seasons, or, you know, and actually that sort of getting into the creativity part of it all is a better place to be.
Yeah.
And actually, so turning away from what must have been just traditional things to do in your level.
I suppose these days, I mean, like always, everything's always been done before. Everyone's trying to reinvent the wheel. We're all trying to kind of do something different and try to be mavericks and try to inspire. But I think the tribes seem to have got bigger of people, that everyone seems to slightly look the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm going off on a bit of a tangent.
No, I like, yeah, I'm...
We went to a certain place at the weekend in the Cotswolds, and it was just... It's just like everyone looked the same. Everyone's doing the same thing. Everyone's focus was this thing. Everyone was, you know, I don't know. I just think we need to kind of blow it off a bit again. We need to, when you reference the King's Road and you just think of all of those independent brands that would be there, that big arcade of, I can't think what was it called, that amazing.
Yes, Hyper.
In Kensington High Street.
Yeah.
Like, it was just... Everyone was able to create their own identity. And I suppose that is what I am striving to do, to let people.
I can hear that.
Of course, I have some dresses that are dresses that you will find. I've just asked my merchandiser to tell us exactly how many of this dress we've sold in kind of at least the last 10 years, where we have that data, because it's a phenomenal, phenomenal dress, and a phenomenal piece. And many brands have tried to replicate it, but it's just unique and special and delicious. And I'm so proud of that dress. But you will find that.
Yeah.
That dress. But it's like, it's how the bride wears it and styles it.
And I think also when you say about that, I think social media just has so much to answer for in terms of that. You know, we become, as you said, this tribe doing the same thing, getting the same shot. you know, it's all about the photograph slightly and looking a certain way. And it is a bit depressing. And I do, that's why I love midlife women. And when we're coming out of that slightly and we're going back to wearing 40 bangles and jingling along the, you know, it's getting back to that confidence. Tell me, you have a real strong advocacy for body positivity as well.
Yeah.
And thank goodness. And I say that the beauty standards are constantly changing, always. But you have said something that I just absolutely love. You said that our bodies are not a trend.
Yeah.
And I've never heard anyone say that before.
Nor are they a piece of fruit that shouldn't be described as a pear or an apple either.
Gosh, yeah. Especially, by the way, when you're a pear. No, an apple. I think an apple's the worst one.
Yeah.
Don't you? I just see that as Monsters, Inc., you know, the little guy.
Yeah.
That's for me, I'm a pear.
Yeah.
So I just look at him, Michael Magowski, I think his name is. I just think that that's me. So I'm agreeing with you with the fruit.
Yeah.
But tell me about the body being a trend, because you've got that woman, you see that woman in that vulnerable moment where she's wanting to have her Rihanna moment. But actually, she feels like she's Michael Mazowski, whatever, I'm saying it wrong.
Yeah.
Why did you say that about bodies are not a trend?
Because they're so diverse. I suppose if you pick out one particular body or body shape, then you're, you know, kind of objectifying that, or you're making that body the body to be right now. And actually, that's only a section of a group of women, a group of people. And it isn't like that. We are all unique and special and deserve to have exactly what that body, you know, that like it's, I used to be so ashamed of my giant bottom at school, and hallelujah to Kim Kardashian, whether you love or hate her, but, and whether it's real or fake, who knows? But the fact that now I see these women wanting that giant butt, and there's, you know, I just think if only, I didn't even put it in my letter to my younger self, but it was just, I just remember tying a jumper around my bum, come rain or shine. You know, if I had to wear two just because it was cold and I needed one around my bottom as well, I would. Like it kind of ruined my life,
yeah,
that bum of mine, until I met my incredible husband that was like, wow, look at your bum. And then Kim Kardashian came along and I was like, oh, brilliant. So the whole trend of bodies and body shapes, it isn't. We are all incredibly beautiful and amazing, and we shouldn't compare our bodies, and we shouldn't look at what the catwalks are doing. I mean, it's hard as a brand when times are great and we can shoot the collection in two different sizes and we can show it, which we have done in the past, which we haven't done of late, just because the cost of creating all of those, it shouldn't be a problem. But of course, it's a business, and I'm not huge.
The practicalities of doing that.
Yeah.
I'm going back to your story, because you did your styling work and that period of your life for 20 years before you returned to bridal wear. And I was so interested to read that initially bridal wear was sort of your side hustle, and that you were still working as a stylist in costume, and your bridal business was basically evolving along the way, and you were making commissions. And it was only around 2005 that your boutique, Halfpenny London, opened. And a few years later, in 2013, you grew out of it pretty quickly. In those early days, how did you sort of navigate taking the side? I mean, you're now very experienced. So was this sort of like, okay, I've got my head around this? You know, some people go from idea, do you know what I mean? And they don't have the 20 years that you had.
Yeah.
And they go into starting. So it's literally everything is falling off everything because they've never run a business before. Did you feel like you'd had a good audition for it?
I did. My dad was a serial entrepreneur. So I learned, you know, doing his books and working for him and sending out invoices and doing all of that from a very young age. You know, that was, I always worked. I always had jobs, whether it was the fruit and veg shop, whether it was in my dad's, he had kind of this kind of a homeless shelter where people needed to go in crisis. And I would do the breakfasts there. And I'd also kind of make jewelry and sell it to friends of my dad's, and all of those little, I had so many side hustles. I paint things. I set up a graphic design company at uni and made people's wedding invites and business cards. And oh my gosh, I mean, I just think of it now that they were just terrible. So I've always had side hustles. I've always made things. It's a little bit like watching Sylvester now making his sculptures and his different things. So 2005, I officially launched Half Money London, the year Amelia Fox got married, and she wore two of my dresses at her wedding to Jared Harris. And we bumped into her aunt at a fashion show together, and she said, do you want to come and have a look around Vogue? And we were like, oh my gosh, yeah, like we'd never been around Vogue. So we went and had a tour of Vogue, and they were doing something on weddings because Charlotte Sinclair, one of the journalists there, was getting married. And they did a little, put one of my little vintagey style belts into Vogue. And Amelia said, you know, and friend said, you have got a website, haven't you? You know, so when people see that in Vogue, they can find you. And it was very new, like 2005. I was like,
yeah, yeah.
And I was on a TV commercial in, I was heading off to Brazil for this big TV commercial for a few weeks. And Amelia said, look, I'll just put some dresses on and model them. And then you'll have some pictures and we can just shoot it and we can make a website. And that's what we did. And I remember the website going live while I was in Ubatuba in Brazil, and the magazine coming out with this tiny little thing. You know, I don't even know if anyone could even read, you know, Kate Halfpenny underneath it. And that's where it all began. So it just grew legs and arms, and it got to 2012. And my husband said, this is ridiculous. The business was run from home. He's like, we can't get out of the house at a weekend. You know, you're downstairs. I'm stuck upstairs in my studio, but I can't pass the landing to go to the loo. He had to go outside over the rooftop back in another bedroom because he couldn't pass in case the bride in the open plan lounge, which would be the wedding studio at the weekend, was naked. And he encouraged me. He was like, look, just do it. Like, you've clearly got the demand. All weekend you're doing this and, you know,
yeah,
it's just grown into something and you've clearly got something. So I remember going with my friend Severine to look at this shop that I'd found on the council's website, and it's our beautiful boutique on Woburn Walk in Bloomsbury. And I was like, oh gosh, it's completely gutting. And I'm not sure it's big enough. And Steph was like, this is just, it's perfect. And she was like, why are you questioning? I was like, I don't know. And it was literally, I think I'd worked out I just needed to sell one dress a month to pay for this shop. I hadn't even taken into consideration rates, the internet,
yeah,
an alarm, insurance. Like, I was so naive, and I love that, yeah, because now I think we're fed so much that you can't be naive.
You can't even get the, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was saying, it's so funny you say that. I was saying this, I think, last week to someone. I said, you know, we always think about naivety as this negative word. I'm actually thinking it's now some, I've sort of evolved that thinking to thinking it's literally should be bottled,
yeah,
and should be one of the most expensive things that you could ever buy. Because if I could just take a massive swig of it right now, after 20 years of being in business like yourself, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It would give me a superpower again,
yeah,
because we would be a bit more Vivian Westwood. We wouldn't give an absolute shit about anything because actually you don't know what you're doing,
no,
and you're okay with that. It's just a, so yeah, would you have maybe even done it if you'd realized all the costs?
No, probably not. Because then it goes on to take in another building because we've outgrown that space, and another building. And now we're in that space where we need another building. And it's just, yeah, it's wild. And yeah, naivety was a gift. And I was one of the first 100 businesses to Instagram as well when that, my brand,
no way,
was all grown. Yeah, they reached out to us.
That is a cool thing, yeah, to say.
That's because of my husband there. He's so on the pulse of all of those things. Like, he is my, you know, this morning he sent me the most beautiful video of behind the scenes of a brand. And, you know, like,
yeah,
just knows exactly what sets me on fire. And the books, like, I just look, there's piles of, there's books, just books everywhere, beautiful fashion books, photography books. Like, for my birthday, there's never a birthday or Christmas gone by that he hasn't bought me a book that I didn't even know existed, or, you know, like a Nadia Lee Cohen book that then has become this, like, oracle of photography, like this, you know, she's just like, wow, and this limited edition. Like, he's so inspiring, and he has been my biggest cheerleader and the one that kind of, you know, booted me out of the house and went, go, take all of your dresses with you.
Yeah.
You can do this. And we then opened the shop in 2013 after refurbishing it. I think I did the whole refurb for about 10 grand. I had to replaster it. It was damp. I had to damp proof it. I had to put electrics in. I surface mounted all these sockets. Like the atelier was downstairs. I've got a tiny office. At one point, it got to about seven people in this tiny office, which is now the stock room for the shop. And, you know, it's not like the dream is now to find a bigger shop because it's, you know, we
had to take on opposite, didn't you, as well?
We took on opposite, and that was for fittings in the atelier. And then we took on upstairs, which we had to move out last summer. And we're currently in my friend's amazing pub in Camberwell for the atelier. But that's too far away, really, from the boutique in central.
Yeah.
So we're forever looking for the.
Oh, how amazing. How amazing. Yeah. I love hearing a brand like yours just go strength to strength. If you've started selling on marketplaces and things are starting to ramp up, consider setting up a Royal Mail click and drop account. It's completely free. Click and Drop integrates with multiple online stores, so you can pull all the orders from your online stores into your account and get your packages out of the door in no time. You can make payments with card and PayPal and generate all of your postage labels in one place. So why not register today? Sit back and let Royal Mail take care of all your parcels. From collection to delivery, they keep it simple. Set up your account today at royalmail.com. I'm going to almost circle back to where we began, which was I mentioned that you and I last spoke during COVID. And the wedding industry was, and I remember talking to you about it, was hardest hit. And there was this postponing and cancellations overnight. Everything just stopped. I was referring to this with a friend the other day. You almost can't believe we went through that. No. I mean, now we're thinking, do you know what I mean? Like, literally tomorrow, everything is just going to stop. I mean, how do you even get your head around it? And I was struck by something that you said to me, because you said that during that time, you almost didn't know who you were anymore. Because it sort of robbed your identity from you as a designer and a founder, and you weren't able to do the things that make you, you. And I think a lot of people, and specifically women, felt during that pandemic, their sort of day jobs became multiple, obviously, day jobs, homeschooling, caring responsibilities. And I read something, I've never heard this, called, it was a she session, because so many, not a recession, but a she session, as in so many women left their jobs at that time, you know, that basically it couldn't happen, you know, which really makes me sad. And I need to read up more about that. But two things. One, you didn't feel like you anymore. You were robbed of your identity. I remember it was Tamara Lohan, Mr. and Mrs. Smith founder, and she said, you aren't your job. You know, you best you don't put all your identity into your career. You must have things outside. You know, you must create that separation. And I thought, I remember recording it thinking, oh my God, I'm all in. Like, the bloody business is called Holly & Co, right? So there's no, you too, yeah. Right? There is no separation going on here. The only way I work is all in.
Yeah.
So when that happened, tell me about that feeling of that identity and are you at peace with being all in?
That's a really massive question, especially of late. Am I at peace with being all in? No, I'm not. And I think I, since the pandemic, have moved more out as well. And since losing my mum, and stepping back and taking some time off, mm-hmm. and stepping a bit more out even further and mm-hmm. allowing people to take control, I am finding, I think I am still in an identity crisis. And I think that, I think it began then. And I still, I'm not quite sure who I am right now. I truly, yeah, there's so many changes, particularly in the last 6 months that have happened with me, with my business, with people very dear and close to me within my business world, that I feel that I've had another midlife crisis, really, sure.
Because you feel that there's something, I find this so fascinating to even brought it up, not realizing what you were going to obviously say here, because it's I'm all in, you know, I'm in that point maybe where you have been for a lot of your, you know, where this is, you know, every moment of every single day, we're on, you know, we're in startup mode. So, you know, that you know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And potentially you've got to a place where it's when I go on holiday and I'm like, guys, I'm going to be working. So do not worry. Do you know what I mean? I'm online all the time. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Comes to like work day 6 or 7, where I realize in 2 days' time I'm going back. And then I start to just go into the holiday and I start tasting the holiday, so to speak. And I start going, oh my God, is this life outside? Like, do people just do this?
Yeah.
I mean, how nice is this?
Yeah.
And I go, but it's like I've tasted a poison apple.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, best don't eat on this too long because yeah. I need to get right back into driving the apple cart.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's happened? Have you tasted something else that's...
I have. We spent so many years trying to make a baby. And when my family is so important to me and I just need to be with them. And I want to do school pickups.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do need to, you know, my husband actually even said this to me yesterday. He was just like, when you come in the door and you're still working, having got off the train and you sit down next to Sylvester and I at the kitchen table and Sylvester's doing his homework and James is making dinner and they're trying to talk to me and I'm just like, still haven't quite finished the day. He said, maybe when you come in the door, you go and do that in a different room because we don't quite still realize that we haven't got access to you yet.
Right.
And I think that kind of floored me because I was like, oh. I feel that just being near them.
Yes.
I'm home and I'm there, but I'm not home. And
yeah.
I'm like, right, what this like
fully present.
It's got to stop. It's got to change. And we just had the most magical 2 week trip. We went to New York and I worked for a few days, but James and Sylvester came. So we had 4 days before I worked. Then they had some fun while I worked. And then we had a day after I worked in New York and then we came home for 24 hours then. We went to forests in Bristol, in Wales, amazing kind of glampingy. It was a wonderful being at nature. I still had to do a tiny bit of work there, but I definitely switch off now. And James said, but you bury your head. And I'm like, but that is the only way. I have to turn off the noise. Like I have to pretend whatever little crisis is happening or whoever needs me or what. It's so difficult when you're a founder and your name is above the door. You can't ever run away. Like the people that have left my business over the last 6 months who were fundamental and incredible and have been on that long journey with me, they can go, they can walk away and say, it's not for me anymore. I don't want this. But, you know, it was like, who do I have my notice into when I've had enough? There's no one.
Yeah.
There are so many challenges when it gets tough. It's lonely being a founder.
Yeah, it is. Sounds like you and me need a good cup of tea maybe, right? With our jangly bracelets and our big eye wear and we can have a little chat about it because it is a very difficult thing being founders. I mean, it's the most biggest high ever.
And I'm so proud.
It's so amazing. But there is no off button.
No.
And don't almost kid yourself that there is. You know, it's and that is what makes brands amazing brands. And in this economic climate, with the social media, with people with little attention span, we are grafting hard. And when you've been doing it 20, 30, 40 years, you know, you are human.
Yeah.
And as you said, you don't turn around to your boss and say, you know what, listen, I've been working for 16 hours, 7 days a week for 30 years. Is there any chance I could have a tiny bit of work-life balance?
Yeah.
Any chance? I just think that my job description didn't have that little bit in it that mentioned what was going to be happening here.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, and yeah, I totally get you. I want to just finish off that COVID part. Just tell me how you navigated that moment because your industry, just like food and drink, you know, or restaurants and things like that, it was done. It was finished. How did you come through COVID?
We were very lucky that brides still wanted to order their dresses. My team were incredible and selling dresses to women in lay-bys that had snuck out to do a FaceTime with the team. And
Adele boy moment.
Yeah, we weren't meeting them. It was kind of, they were doing a FaceTime from a lay-by so they weren't at home where their husband could hear them to talk about their dress because the minute the pandemic was over, they were getting married.
Right.
So they needed to order it. So we were still able to make things. We had teams working in isolation and the positive that came out was then this insane surge of orders post the pandemic and the following year. And then I suppose the business grew to facilitate that. And, you know, then you don't have, you know, I know so many companies that set their benchmark and against all of
them. Are you meaning set their benchmark against what they were doing during COVID?
No, the post-COVID flurry.
Yeah, and I also know people doing it during COVID who were selling like Christmas every single day.
Yeah.
You know, and then thinking that this would last. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about post and I'm within, so both of them. And then thinking, and then I'm not being funny, having to set their businesses up that way. Because what are you going to do? Turn down the orders, you know? And then what?
Yeah.
When it starts going normal?
Yeah.
And is that failure? You know, because people were looking at it like it should have been normal, but it wasn't normal.
Yeah.
These were inflated times, weren't they?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's just all, and I think now we're seeing that fallout. We're seeing the, you can't put so much money against something. You can't sell so much stuff. You can't have a massive high after a serious low and then not experience the dip again. Like it's just, it's the roller coaster of life.
It's the roller coaster, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, I think the highs are so high and it's just polarizing. It's just like, it's just.
And when I think about it, it's almost when people say, you know, we're out of COVID. I'm like, I don't know, 10 years, we should say we're out of COVID.
Yeah.
Because actually the ripple effect, as you said, building your businesses up, 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 and then having this amazing growth and then having maybe a natural coming down into a dip. But then what are you meant to do? Lay off people? What's meant to be happening here? And actually that's COVID. That's COVID coming through. And I think so many companies talk to me about how COVID is absolutely still there.
Yeah.
In some guise, it is affecting them. When you've come out of this, and we're going to have a good natter about sort of your next part of your life off this podcast, but are you excited about what's coming your way?
I am.
Even though you're having a bit of a midlife crisis, great. But you're looking great for it, by the way. I mean, that's all, you know, you're pulling it off. Are you excited about your world?
I am. I'm so excited. I have the most phenomenal brand. I have the most beautiful product. I have heritage. I haven't made it up. It's not quickly been brought to the table. It has authenticity and love. And
you can see it, by the way.
It's 20 years old. It's like, wow, we've made it. We've got to there. It's kind of, I have nothing left to prove. I love what I do. I love the people that I work with and the product that we have and the brides. And it's hard work and fighting fires, but that's just business.
Yeah.
And actually, what a privilege to have this to business and not to be able to run away as well.
Yeah.
But it's just for me now, it is putting the fundamental team in to move me out a little, that I can smell the coffee. I can take the breaks, and I'm excited.
Well,
beyond
excited. I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you. We're coming towards the end of this podcast, and I wanted to ask you, when you were just using that and talking about what you do, I was just thinking of you as a really beautiful swan. I had you as a swan in a bridal dress, and then your little duck feet really, really pedaling hard under the water, which is, you know, which is the thing.
I describe that all the time.
That's the thing that's going on underneath the water. And so if we take that and we think about the roller coaster that you were just describing, if you had to say on this journey, what has been one of your biggest lows, what would you say it was?
I think losing my mom.
Yeah.
I think it rocked my world. Yeah.
And I'm going to move you swiftly on to your high. On that roller coaster, I'm making you a swan. No, forget the duck feet, by the way. You're the swan in the cart with your beautiful dress on.
Yeah.
What would you say has been your greatest high?
I think my greatest high was opening that boutique. My husband giving me the courage to open that boutique, to believe in it, and then to start wholesaling. Like, wow, what do you mean? Other stores want to sell my things. And Net-a-Porter, it was just kind of like, believing it was a real, you know, becoming a limited company, not just, you know, a little sole trader me. Like, it was just,
Amazing. Amazing. That moment, which is a long time ago now, is still the keys moment. The keys that you opened it up is still the moment that you hold. It's just phenomenal. Yeah. Kate, I've loved this podcast. I'm now going to ask you to read a letter to little Kate.
Yes.
And I don't know what you're going to say. And I've loved every second of hearing your story. But I just wanted to thank you for sharing a little bit of your soul with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I hand over to you.
Thank you. Give me 1 second while I find the final draft. I've got two on one page. I just want to make sure which one it is.
I was saying to the listeners here that, you know, I was laughing with Kate that I do think that our guests want to poke my eyeballs out. You know, not only do I take up their busy time, but then I ask them also just to do that little thing as busy human beings. Oh, do you mind just reflecting on your entire childhood and what you would actually say to yourself on top of everything else? And I'm sure the hatred and the cursing that goes on. But then we get to this moment and I'm just so happy that you did it, Kate. And I'm really, really thankful.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Really, it's been doing the letter to my younger self has been actually a cathartic part of this next journey.
Thank you, Kate, for saying that.
Totally. And I've loved it. But yeah, bear with me if I cry.
I'm right here with you.
Right. Dear Kate, you are enough. You always have been. Never let anyone, especially yourself, convince you otherwise. Live with your heart, not just your head. There's no need to be too serious all the time. Life will unfold as it should. There are plenty of people around to help unravel the tight knots when things get too heavy. Be grateful to those who have lifted... Oh, I don't know why I'm so emotional. I think it's this whole conversation that we've had.
It gets... I'm here.
Be grateful to those who have lifted you along the way and always, always pay that forward. That kindness you've received, let it flow through you and out into the world. Listen deeply, really listen. The gift of listening is quiet magic, and when you use it, you'll learn more than you ever thought possible. You don't need to know it all, and you never will. That's the beauty of the journey. Speak your truth, even when your voice shakes. Having an opinion matters. Not everyone needs to agree with you, and that's okay. Stand tall in your values. Try, really try, not to worry about what other people think. Comparison will rob you blind of joy every single time, and you've got too much beauty in you to waste on doubt. You have love, talent, creativity, and fire in spades, and no one else's validation defines you. You need to trust yourself. Surround yourself with people who challenge you, who are better than you in all the right ways. Celebrate their brilliance. It complements yours. You will rise to them. Cherish your family. They did the best they could with what they knew. Their mistakes weren't failures. They were lessons passed to you in love. Take what helps, leave what hurts, but honor the roots. The most important thing to know and remember is that you are so loved and your family are so very proud of you. Cherish that and them. Never go to bed on an argument and don't hold back when it comes to love. Say it, show it, remind people often. We all need to feel loved. It's not weakness, it's human. Your heart will get broken, maybe more than once, but with every crack it opens wider. Let it. It will heal stronger, softer, and even more ready to love. Dream like a wild thing because your dreams can become real. Celebrate your body. Seriously, that amazing, brilliant body you're in. Treat it with love. It's your home, your engine, your magic maker. Love yourself and watch what happens. There will be a time when you wonder if becoming a mother will ever happen for you. It won't be easy. There will be waiting. There will be tears. There will be needles, appointments, and quiet prayers in sterile rooms. IVF will test your strength, your patience and your hope. But hold on, miracles don't always arrive on schedule, but they do arrive. And when that little boy comes into your life, he will shift your world on its axis. His laugh will echo in places that once felt hollow, and every part of your journey will suddenly make sense. Oh, I'm so sorry, I don't mean to cry. Oh,
please, carry on.
You will create that life with the most incredible man, the one who sees you, really sees you. He will love you deeply, protectively, with every cell in his body. So wait for him. learn from the wrong ones, but don't settle. The right one is worth every lesson along the way. Doubt will visit you. It visits us all. But courage is what makes you brave, what makes you an entrepreneur, a visionary, a doer. Never underestimate your own power. And that surname you got teased for as a freckly ginger kid, it's going to be the name of your international bridal brand. Yes, really. Your freckles and red hair are fire. Own them. Scars from bullies, wear them with pride. They made you stronger, wiser, kinder, and infinitely more empathetic. Be the maverick. Don't follow trends, make them. Manifest big, trust your gut. It's your inner compass, your quiet guardian angel, and speak kindly about yourself. You're listening after all. Words are powerful. Use them to build, not bruise. And remember, your own company is enough. Read a book, sit in silence. You don't need others to feel whole. Work only with exceptional people. Hire the ones you think you can't afford. They'll stretch you. You'll rise to meet them. Don't stress about your dyslexia. It's not a flaw. It's your secret sauce. What you don't say in perfect sentences, you show in stunning visuals and unstoppable creativity. Being different, that's your superpower. Never be ashamed of your roots. They're where your grit and fire come from. Your family built the foundation. You'll build the empire. And never be afraid to ask for help. Just make sure you're asking the givers, not the takers, and protect your ideas. They're gold. You are stronger than you think, braver than you feel, and more capable than you'll ever fully believe. Keep going. The best parts are yet to come. And don't you dare give up. With love, Kate.
Don't you dare give up.
I know.
I feel like we've had the privilege of listening to your story at a pivotal point in your life. And it's a very personal pivotal point, and I can feel that. And I just can't thank you enough on behalf of women who are also having pivotal points in their lives. And it's pain. It's real pain to know what to do. But when you think about what you have done and built, the creativity that you have oozed, the amount of human beings you've made happy, whatever you're going to do next or build in your life is going to be phenomenal. And you need to hold on to that. You are a woman full of grit. And your journey with your IVF, your son, everything, it will all lead to this point. I can just feel it. I can feel that you're a phenomenal human being. And I, for one, am excited to know what that will be. But I feel like you've really let us in today. And thank you so much, Kate, for being on this podcast and sharing your heart with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe, and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams to build a life they love.